WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Whoa! Is it Friday already? My goodness, time flies when you're having fun, and we certainly have been having a great time here on WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome to Friday's show. I am your host, Al Martin, and boy, oh boy, do we have a fantastic hour in store for you all. On today's show, just in case you missed last night's Current Sports TV sit-down with Jake Boss Sr., yes, baseball royalty. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, we will play that interview on today's show. And trust me, you do not want to miss it. We will also, of course, recap what took place last night as Michigan State stymies the hottest team in the Big Ten Conference in Wisconsin, winners of seven straight, before Michigan State just completely handed it to them. We'll recap what took place last night. You don't want to miss that. We'll also bring you our takeaways from the NBA trade deadline, which ended yesterday around 3 p.m. We'll also invite Brett Cass to bring you Brett's bonehead moves, and then we will sum up the week with Reflection Friday. That and so much more. You know the number to be a part of the show. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Let's get this party started with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Again, for this Friday, February 19th. All right, the number 8 Michigan State men's basketball team defeated the visiting Wisconsin Badgers last night, 69-57 in the game. That wasn't as close as that final score indicates. The Spartans were paced by Denzel Valentine. 24 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. Bryn Forbes tossed up 17 points. Not to be overlooked was Spartan freshie Deontay Davis. His effort against Wisconsin forward Nigel Hayes was spectacular. Davis held Hayes to just 5 points on 1 of 13 shooting. Wisconsin freshman forward Ethan Happ led the Badgers with 18 points. The win ended the Badgers' 7-game win streak.
Valentine cans the 3. 14-point game. Valentine over the slams there for Davis. Stolen by Harris. Valentine!
Yes, more on Denzel Valentine and the MSU men's basketball team in just a second. And last night, the Minnesota Golden Gophers stunned the Maryland Terrapins at home 68-63, the final of that one. It was a sloppy game for Maryland that saw them only put up 29 points in the first half to Minnesota's 40. The Terrapins came back from an 11-point halftime deficit to take a late lead, but they failed on several chances to seal the game on its final seconds. Now, the Golden Gophers were previously, get this, 0-13 in Big Ten Conference play.
You know, there's not too many fans that would come out day in and day out for an 0-13 team. So just the kind to have the kind of support we have here is just something really special. And I mean, we haven't had the best year, but we just kept fighting, and we knew we'd show up one of these nights. And to have it against Maryland, one of the top teams in the country, you know, in front of our home crowd, it's something they deserve. They've stuck with us all year, and we just continue to fight every single night.
Yes, that was a very emotional Minnesota senior, Joey King, talking about the student support for Minnesota throughout this year. The Michigan State women's basketball team snuck away with a 70-67 road win against Rutgers last night. Ariel Powers led the team. When doesn't she, right? 27 points, 14 boards, while Brandy Agee added 12 points. Kennedy Johnson with 11 points, and Tori Jankowska put up 10. Powers put the team ahead 67-65 with 27 seconds left, and Rutgers was never able to get back on top. The number 25 Spartans will return home to the Breslin Center this Sunday for a matchup with the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Tip-off is set for 1 p.m. Detroit Red Wings action, folks. Defense has been a struggle for the Wings lately, and it showed as Detroit fell on the road to the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-3.
Yeah, I didn't think we were good enough defensively. I didn't think as a five-man unit we weren't even close. we cannot play that way and have long-term success. I thought we were way too loose. We gave up way too many chances. Certainly credit to them. They played very well. But I focus on our team, and I thought it was our weakest five-man unit defensively that we've had in a while.
Peter Mrazek was pulled early in the third period after giving up five goals and replaced by Jimmy Howard. The second straight road loss for the Wings, Detroit has allowed 15 goals in the past three games. The Detroit Pistons take on the Washington Wizards at 7 p.m. tonight. Detroit is only a half game out of the final spot in the Eastern Conference. The Pistons are looking to avoid a fourth straight loss amid their playoff push, while the Wizards are looking to make their late playoff push as well. The Pistons and Wizards both made moves before the 3 p.m. trade deadline yesterday. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is also expected to return after missing the past four games due to injury. Detroit Lions linebacker Stephen Tulloch announced yesterday on his Instagram that he will not be playing for the Detroit Lions next year. Although the team has yet to announce anything, Tulloch's post should be indicative of what's really to come. Quote, "What a journey it's been, Detroit. 5 years of some of the greatest memories of my career. Such is life. There is constant change, but change that I'm looking forward to. As one chapter closes in my career, another opens up." And Lynn Henning of the Detroit News has reported that Dan Dickerson and Mario Mbemba will switch roles at least 10 times throughout the 2016 season. The flip was encouraged by Mike Ilitch, who last year decided to add Jack Morris and Kirk Gibson as analysts in a bid to freshen up telecasts. Their broadcast partners will be unaffected by any move. So Dan and Mario both will be switching up between radio and TV. Very interesting stuff there. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Phone lines are now open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let's start the show.
This is hard for my family, but this will work out. And my wife would punch me if I were to sit up here and whine about what's going on. That doesn't take away the pain. But it will work out because God causes all things to work out. You just can't quit. You can't give in. See, the Bible says Satan comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And America teaches us to just numb that, and it's not true, but it is true. All you gotta do is look around you. Get outside of these walls and you know it's true. This will work out. Doesn't mean it's not hard. Doesn't mean it's not painful. Doesn't mean we don't have tough times, and we're gonna have tough times. What we need is the Lord. And that's what my wife tried to exhibit every single day. I'm going to close with this, and I think it's the most important thing that we need to understand. Everybody's praying for me and my family, which is right. But let us not forget that there were two people in this situation, and that family needs prayer as well. And we have no ill will towards that family. In my house, we have a sign that says, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." We cannot serve the Lord if we don't have a heart of forgiveness. That family didn't wake up wanting to hurt my wife. Life is hard. It is very hard. And that was tough. But we hold no ill will towards the Donaldson family. And we, as a group, brothers united in unity, should be praying for that family because they grieve as well. So let's not lose sight of what's important. God will work this out. My wife is in heaven. God loves us. God is love. And when we walk away from this place today, let's celebrate, because my wife is where we all need to be. And I'm envious of that. But I got five crumb snatchers I got to deal with. I love you guys for taking time out of your day to celebrate my wife. We didn't lose her. When you lose something, you can't find it. I know exactly where my wife is. I'll miss holding her hand. I'll miss talking with my wife. Sam and Coach Donovan probably couldn't figure out why I always wanted to get out of the office, me and Mo Cheeks. Mo probably wanted to go do something else, but we always wanted to get out of the office. I just enjoy being with my wife. I enjoy being with my family. And most of the times we didn't do anything. We'd just be at the house sitting around doing nothing. I'm gonna miss that. Let's not lose sight of what's important. God is important. What Christ did on the cross is important. Let's not lose sight of that family that also lost someone that they love. I love you guys. I hope I get a chance to hug and shake a hand and give a kiss on the cheek. But let's keep what's important at the forefront. Thank you.
Yes, and that is how we start today's Current Sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Friday, February 19th. I trust that you all have had an outstanding week. What you just heard was actually the voice of assistant coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, Monty Williams. If you didn't know, and we reported this story the day after it occurred, Ingrid Williams, his wife, sadly passed away at the age of 44. She was involved in a car crash last week in Oklahoma City when she was hit head-on by a car that crossed over the center lane. She was taken to a hospital and passed away the following evening from injuries suffered in the crash. The driver of the other car was pronounced dead at the scene. I can only imagine what an experience like that is like to, again, at only the age of 44, have your wife taken away, victim of just really an unpredictable circumstance, and have to move on with life. It certainly would leave a sour taste in the mouth of anyone and would drive many people insane. But what Monty Williams exhibited yesterday during the memorial of his wife was nothing short of admirable, inspirational, and amazing. Her husband, Monty Williams, again, he has to go through life now without his best friend and his wife, and of course raised their beautiful children, five children ranging from the age of 5 to 17 years old. I can only imagine, the average human being can only imagine what that man is going through. But my oh my, how touching were those words yesterday from Monty. Really, those words not just addressing the current distraught situation that his family now is enduring, but addressing a lesson in life. And that primary lesson being the art of forgiveness. It's something that's oh so hard at times. Oh so hard. You know, life certainly brings about many twists and turns, many unfortunate events. And it would be easy for Monty to sit up there and to blame and point the finger at someone else for this incident for occurring. But my oh my, Monty clearly exhibited yesterday during that speech that he is a strong man of faith, and he certainly believes in the power of forgiveness. And that, hey, life happens. Things happen for a reason. And what really struck me when watching Monty up there at that podium is that you didn't see any tears from him. You didn't see any tears. You saw some sadness in his eyes, without a doubt. I mean, he just lost his wife. But he wasn't overly emotional to the fact that you really saw him vulnerable and not strong. But man, oh man, did he exhibit the complete opposite yesterday. If you have not seen the visual of that speech, it was one of the most remarkable addresses that I've ever seen in my life. And thoughts and prayers go out to the Williams family. Thoughts and prayers go out to the NBA family. And for anyone out there listening who may be going through something distraught in their lives, I wanted to play that because hopefully that is an example for those out there who are struggling on a daily basis with anything to realize that, hey, sometimes it's all about putting on your boots, strapping it up, and just going out there and attacking life with a smile on your face, because some things are just completely out of your hands. Much prayers and much love to all of our listeners out there. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, I know that you saw Monty's speech yesterday and were particularly moved. And he has, of course, direct ties to one of your favorite teams. I believe your favorite team in all of sports, the New Orleans Pelicans. He was once the head coach for your Pels. What was your thoughts watching Monty at that podium address the countless individuals who showed up to Ingrid Williams Memorial?
You know, it just put me in such a deep state of meditation and thought, because I can't fathom being able to have that composure, that courage, and that compassion after your wife is taken off the face of the earth. Remember, this family had 5 children as well, still does. Monty Williams now has to take care of them all by himself. He's lost his companion, his best friend in the world, and he went up there and asked for prayers for the other family. To be able to have that grace, that forgiveness, that compassion, none of those words touch what Monty Williams exhibited last night. So I thought it was just astounding, inspirational, and something that we should all look up to be. That is a role model, that is somebody placed on the face of the earth who really, just like his wife, deserves to be up in a higher place. So Monty Williams, all hats off to him, prayers for his family, and in accordance with his wishes, and as we always should, prayers for the other family as well. There were 2 people involved in this accident. 2 families are grieving right now, and actually many more if you consider all the people who were touched by the Williams family, specifically Ingrid Williams. So it's really just an unfortunate situation all around. But in some ways, you're thankful that it happened to a man of such strength. Mm-hmm. And of such will that he can keep going forward and live the life he's supposed to. So all prayers and all thoughts to Monty Williams and the Donaldsons as well.
Very well said. Again, folks, the phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's move on now. Let's talk about last night's Michigan State men's basketball game, completely trouncing the Wisconsin Badgers. 69-57, the final of that one last night. Another stellar performance by Denzel Valentine. And I tell you what, I did make the statement. I do think Buddy Hield, it is his National Player of the Year award to lose. But Denzel Valentine, I mean, if he's going to go out, he's going to go out kicking and screaming, right? Just another stellar effort from him. I mean, he was 9 of 19 from the floor last night. 24 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. Just stellar. And what's so remarkable about this Michigan State team is just how unselfish everyone, not just Valentine, but everyone from top to bottom is. They lead the nation when it comes to assist, ladies and gents. And last night was a perfect example yet again of that. 20 assists on 26 buckets. Bryn Forbes was 6 of 12, 17 points for him, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. And Aaron Harris went 4 of 6 from the field for 10 points. And also defensively, I think that's really the becoming this team's identity as we move forward here in the Big Ten year. Michigan State has turned up the defense, ladies and gents. And again, this is a Wisconsin team that on January 17th, again, a game that sparked that 7-game win streak for the Badgers. So it starts with MSU and it ends with MSU. How interesting is that, right? But, you know, this is a Wisconsin Badgers team that's pretty good. pretty good, folks. Previously the hottest team in the conference. They beat Michigan State by 1 point. That was a gritty, gritty game. 77-76, the final of that one. Then Michigan State just comes out and just stymies them. Nigel Hayes, 1 of 13 from the floor. He was 0 of 5 from the three-point line. A total of 5 points for Mr. Hayes. How surprising is that? And we mentioned Ethan Happ in our headliners. You know, Ethan Happ, he finished with 18 points, 3 boards for him. He went 7 of 16 from the field. But again, the majority of his buckets came in that second half, because at halftime, Ethan Happ was 1 of 5 from the field. So he didn't really start getting into a lather until that second half of the game. But it's just so remarkable just how it really seems as though this team is finding a groove on the defensive end of the floor. And, you know, something that surprised me, Isaac, was last night when we went and interviewed Denzel Valentine first. Valentine, he completely gave just a ton of credit, and even Tom Izzo as well. Tom Izzo did it first, I should say, in his postgame presser. He gave a big shout-out, big ups to Aaron Harris, the Michigan State guard, of course, transferred from West Virginia, for his defensive effort last night. And then I heard Denzel Valentine say, you know, yeah, he, you know, Aaron Harris kind of leads us on the defensive end. And, you know, how many, just about everybody on the team looks at Aaron Harris as the defensive leader of this squad. And it was so impressive to watch Aaron Harris, you know, matched up against multiple guys throughout the night, move his feet. He picked up a charge here and there. He was able to really stick with his defender. And, you know, Denzel Valentine mentioned now, you know, how, you know, after tip-off, you know, when that first defensive possession, you know, Aaron Harris is a catalyst in making sure and letting it be known to his team that they got to play defense by smacking the ground. You know, they had that mantra where they all kind of smack the ground at the same time, but Aaron is the first to do it. But it was just remarkable, because that's the storyline that we haven't really talked about much this year, about Aaron Harris being a defensive catalyst. And that was one of the question marks for him coming into this season, was how well of a defender Aaron Harris was, because we know he could shoot. And you know Tom Izzo's saying with that, shooters don't defend. Well, Aaron Harris certainly has stepped up in that area.
Well, and this extends throughout the team. Al, one constant dialogue that you and I have been having is how Caris LeVert's injury almost improved everybody else on Michigan. The same thing happened, in my opinion, with Lou Rolls' Tum Tum Nairn Jr. When he went out, it forced all of the perimeter defenders to step their game up. Now, instead of guarding an off-ball player who really was a spot-up shooter, they had to guard the best players on other teams. And you've seen the improvement from Aaron Harris, from Bryn Forbes, from Denzel Valentine even, who was stuck on Nigel Hayes some last game and did fantastically. So the play of all of these guys, and you're right, it especially starts with Aaron Harris, the smacking of the floor, the intensity he brings. He's so vocal on the court as well. But it extends throughout the team. The perimeter defense on this team has gotten so much better since Tum Tum left left the team for injury. So,
and I would even argue, Isaac, I think when Denzel Valentine went out with those three games, it forced them to step up defensively as well, because, and this is something that Denzel Valentine does not get a lot of credit for. You look at his numbers offensively, you know, another stellar game last night, 24 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. But, you know, Izzo has constantly made the statement that Denzel Valentine is such an underrated defender and one of the best defenders on this squad.
Yeah, and you saw it last night. Denzel Valentine, really all facets of his game have really rounded out. I mean, he started off freshman, sophomore year. He's primarily a three-point shooter with a little bit of an offensive game. You've seen him develop as a point guard. He's become such a better passer because he always had the flashy pass in his game. He had it in his pocket. Mm-hmm. But he'd use it very free with all, almost. He just passed it all over the place, turn it over a bunch. This year, he's really cut down on his turnovers, and that's made all the difference defensively. He's ratcheted up the intensity. He's taken and assumed the role of the leader of this team, and on every end of the court, he's making a difference. So,
yeah, he definitely is.
He's done a similar thing, and so is Aaron Harris.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you look at the numbers for Wisconsin. Again, now Nigel Hayes, 1 of 13. Ethan Happ, again, he didn't get it going until the game went on. Bronson Koenig, he was 4 of 9. Not a bad game for Bronson. I mean, 12 points for him, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 of 5 from the three-point line. But overall, Nigel Hayes, and Tom Izzo mentioned this last night as well. I mean, Nigel Hayes won't go ever for the rest of his career 1 of 13 from the field. I mean, that was just, again, some of it had to do with Michigan State's defense, like Izzo said, but a lot of it had to do with just not being on that game as well. So that won't ever happen. Again, if they got more production from Nigel Hayes, it certainly would have been a closer game than it was throughout the majority of that matchup last night. And then looking at the entire spectrum of the Big Ten, though, I mean, last night, you know, we mentioned how Maryland was beaten by Minnesota on the road last night at the Barn, the students storming the court, the first Big Ten win for the Golden Gophers of the season. Things are getting very interesting because in the last 2 days, we have seen the number 3, 4, 5, and 6 teams all fall. And that just goes to show how much parity there is in college basketball this season. You think your bracket was burned throughout the first day or two of the tournament last year? Heck, you could might as well just burn your bracket right now, okay? Why even do one? I mean, it's going to be so insane. And that's why I say I love college hoops this year in particular, because there is not that one dominant team you can point at, Isaac, and say, okay, that is the clear-cut favorite. It is going to be tremendously hard for anyone to knock that team off. That team doesn't exist in this year's college realm. You know, last year, I always bring this up, last year was clearly Kentucky. I mean, Kentucky, you know, they held an undefeated record throughout most of their season. You don't have that this year. I mean, you can make an argument for Michigan State. You can make an argument for Villanova. You can make an argument for Kansas, a team that Michigan State did beat at the very beginning of the year. I mean, there's so many ways you can go with this thing. And now, in the Big Ten Conference, just evaluating the standings, Michigan State, which, you know, a lot of people thought didn't have a chance at climbing anywhere near the peak, looking at how they started the Big Ten Conference year, they are now sitting at number 4 in the Big Ten Conference. You have Indiana, you've got Iowa, Maryland, and then Michigan State. Iowa and Maryland, two of the teams falling in the last 2 days. How crazy is that, though? And realistically, I mean, it's a bit far-fetched for them to win the Big Ten still.
That was the question I was about to pose
right,
to you.
Right. It's a bit far-fetched, I think, because, again, a lot like Izzo said, because Joe Rex wrote of the Detroit Free Press asked Izzo this, do you think that the door is cracking here? But Izzo also mentioned that, okay, you would need a lot of those upsets to continue to happen throughout the final weeks of this Big Ten year, which isn't unrealistic. But if you look at Indiana, for instance, and look at who they have coming up here, I'm scrolling to their schedule. Okay, they've got Purdue, Illinois, then they play at Iowa. So you can look, you know, Iowa or Indiana is going to lose that game because they play each other on, what, March 1st, and then they take on Maryland. So there's going to be a few losses here, and maybe it does open up a window of opportunity, but Michigan State has to win the gamut, so to speak. They have to win out to end the year, which isn't unrealistic. The door is cracked. I don't think it's knocked down just yet.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It is a crack, though, and like you said, these teams mutually face opposition, which would knock each other off. So that's a big deal for MSU whenever you can get a guaranteed loss from all of the teams, that's a big deal. However, there's still a lot of losing to go. You've got to remember Michigan State is not necessarily a team that's been consistent throughout the course of the season. They've gotten better as it's gone along. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, you look at just a few games here and there, and they've got relapses where they look back to their early season, or not their early season, where they had the 3 losses in a row and things like that. Michigan State almost had the 2 in a row as well. So it's just a situation where you can never take anything for guaranteed, especially during this season. Maryland learned that lesson better than anybody last night. And I have to bring up, too, Melo Trimble.
He's falling
off.
How
disappointing has he been this year?
You think he's hurting his draft stock right now?
Oh, I think 100%. Last year, I would have taken him in the top 10, probably around the 7 or 8 slot.
I think he still will be a top 10. I don't think he started that bad. Because there's still time for him to, again, prove it on the grander scale of things. I mean, he could very well have a great Big Ten tournament. He could very well make a strong outing in the NCAA tournament as well. There's still time for him. I don't think he's hurt it. You know, I don't think scouts are saying, okay, he's going through a rough patch right here, but he still has the intangibles that you want from an NBA guard.
Well, and while he's had a worse season than he certainly did last year, hasn't been as productive, but part of that is because in many ways he's going through a position change. Mm-hmm. Last year he primarily played off ball at the number 2, and as he got better, he did have to assume more responsibility handling the ball and creating his own shot.
Right.
However, this year with Rashid Suleiman, he's assumed that number one role. So there are growing pains that come along with that, but it's better for him to have them now than going to the NBA.
Yeah, very interesting stuff there. Also, really quick question before we hit our first break here. Why isn't Javon Best getting more playing time?
Well,
I'm puzzled, man. I don't know. I've been trying to figure it out. I just can't. I don't get it. I understand this team is pretty deep. And guys right now are really starting to find a groove. Guys like an Aaron Harris, you know, you look deeper into the bench. I mean, well, even Alvin Ellis is really not giving you anything, though. I mean, maybe defensively he is.
I think he's gotten better.
He's gotten better, but, I mean, defensively he comes in, but he's not scoring. If you look at his stats last night, let's see. Alvin Ellis, he played 6 minutes. Yeah, one turnover, one assist, one rebound. Okay, he's giving you a little something there, I guess. But, you know, Marvin Clark, you know, he went, what, 0-1 from the floor. No points.
Yeah, Marvin's still not doing it.
Three rebounds, one assist. Why not just throw Javon in there and see what he can do? I don't know. Why isn't Javon playing?
Javon was part of the unit and a significant problem.
Yeah,
which went in for 45 seconds last night.
Exactly. He was a part of the reserves, and then the reserves came in and mucked it up, and it was like a 12 point game at one point, and then Time Izzo says, no, we got to put our starters back in, but. Yeah. Why not play Javon earlier though? I'm confused on that. I'm really puzzled there.
Well, I think Tom Izzo is also just experimenting still with the rotation, even though it's this late in the season. He's not set on Marvin Clark just yet.
He's not experimenting with Javon Best. I'll tell you that, because he's not even playing the man.
Well,
so,
but Marvin Clark, he'll eventually get replaced if he doesn't step it up. Don't you agree?
Yeah, but
and Javon would be next in that pecking order.
But why isn't he already in that pick? I mean, because Javon was one of those guys I looked at and said, okay, this guy is going to be a big factor this season.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, it's like, poof, he's like Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Well, at the start of the season, I picked Javon Best to be the breakout player for Michigan State this year.
You did.
Because against Kansas, he had those 6 points as soon as the game opened up. He kept Michigan State running in that one. So,
right.
Out of the gates, it looked like, okay, he gets the start against Kansas. Tom Izzo's got big plans for this guy, and we didn't get to see much of him last year. He's a wild card.
I don't know what happened, man. I don't know. I'm confused, man. That's the big question mark for me. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll give you guys a recap of last night's current sports TV sit-down with baseball royalty, Jake Boss Sr. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Current Sports. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, baseball has returned. Baseball has returned. Yes, pitchers and catchers reported officially this week. Of course, the Tigers getting underway out in Lakeland, Florida. Their baseball spring training home for 34 years. Pretty cool stuff there. And we have been slowly but surely getting you in the mood for baseball. Of course, I can smell the hot dogs. There is nothing. Like a baseball dog, Isaac, okay? I mean, I love it. When I go to Tigers games, that's the first thing I get. As unhealthy as it may be, but I have to get me a dog anytime I go to a Tigers game. It's nothing like it, dude. Nothing like it.
See, I go with peanuts. That's my tradition. Get them delivered right to your
seat. I'm not
a big
peanut guy.
Keeps in down.
I'm not a big
really?
Peanut. I've never been a big peanut. Sunflower seeds, yeah, I dig sunflower seeds, but
those are too much work for me. Those are too tough.
Yeah, I can dig that. But you know what? You know, here on the show, again, we've been getting you guys in the mood for baseball. And I got the chance this week on Current Sports TV to chat with the man, again, who is certainly baseball royalty when you discuss baseball here in Michigan. He got his first head coaching job, actually, in 1973 at Lansing Everett High School, where he enjoyed great success for more than 20 years. He coached the Vikings through the 1996 season and collected numerous honors in the process. He also, you know, after Lansing Everett, he began to coach Lansing Catholic Central as their head baseball coach from 2002 to 2008. Boss's combined 29 years of head coaching experience netted more than 500 wins, and he was inducted into the Michigan High School Baseball Coaches Association Hall of Fame in 1994. He won 3 Diamond Classics, 7 conference titles, 10 district championships, 3 regional crowns, and 1 MIAA championship with Alma College. He was even a major league scout for the Toronto Blue Jays and, most recently, an associate scout for the LA Dodgers. He was inducted into the Greater Lansing Hall of Fame in 2009. So I invited Boss to sit down on Current Sports TV last night, and I first had to ask him, when did his love for the game begin?
Started on the south side of Chicago, and I can remember, you know, like it was yesterday. I started playing organized baseball when I was 7 years old, and people paid 25 cents to come and watch us play at Shoebridge Field in Chicago. And I remember my first game as a seven-year-old. I was playing second base, and we're throwing a ball around the infield, and I'm looking in the stands for Mom and Dad, and I take one in the right eye.
So not paying attention, what's going on in the county.
Right, right.
But, wow, you still remember that moment, huh?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember too many things anymore, but I do remember that one. But, yeah, I played a lot of ball on the south side of Chicago, and my dad got me into it real early. And, of course, back then, baseball was really, really big in Chicago, and it still is on the outskirts. But, you know, the neighborhoods, we were always playing ball. And if we weren't playing baseball, we were either at Comiskey Park or Wrigley Field, you know, watching the American League as well as the National League. So we got to see all the Hall of Famers, all the stars, and it was it's quite an eventful experience growing up on the south side of Chicago.
You know, Jake, it's so interesting that you talk about, you know, just playing pickup baseball on a regular summer afternoon, right? And it was something that was the norm back in the day. I mean, now it's rare to drive by a park and to see a group of kids playing the game. I mean, is that disheartening at all?
It is, because back, you know, when we – yeah, back in the old days, right? Back when we were kids, you know, it only took 2 guys. You only needed 2 guys, and you needed a brick wall and a little chalk for the strike zone,
right,
and so forth. You know, and you played what we call fast pitch. You know, and just 2 guys, and you hit it here for a single, there for a double, triple, and back then also you knew all the ball clubs, and you knew their batting orders, okay? Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the White Sox, if I was the White Sox and I was a right-handed hitter, but when Nellie Fox came up, I was a left-handed hitter, okay? Right. And you did all that, and that was really, really, really a great experience.
Now, you mentioned how your father, of course, passed the game down to you as a young pup, and how you just really took to it. And, of course, you've done the same when it comes to your son, Jake Boss Jr., who is the head coach of the Michigan State baseball team. I mean, what was Jake Boss Jr. like growing up, and how did you pass the game along to him?
He spent the majority of his life in a dugout.
Did he? Oh, I can imagine.
From the time he could walk, he was, you know, pretty much in our dugout. He was our bat boy, and so he was always around the game. But what was really interesting, as he got older and so forth, he played a lot of summer ball, but he went to a parochial high school his first 2 years. Did not have baseball, but he continued to play during the summer. And then at the end of his sophomore year, he came to me and he asked me if he could play for me at Everett High School. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, does it get better than that?
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so we enrolled him at Everett High School, and we had to pay tuition because we live in Holt. And so he played 2 years for me at Everett High School and was a pretty good player.
Did you ever think he would become a coach?
You know, yes, but at this level, no. Mm-hmm. I remember when he graduated from Alma College, he played 4 years at Alma College and played as a freshman and had a good career there. Graduated and had a head job, baseball job at Weberville High School. And so Mom and I are thinking, oh, boy, this is awesome. He's got a steady job. He's got benefits. And, you know, and he's a baseball coach. I mean,
everything's aligning. The stars are aligning.
And,
right?
And he wanted to play us at Everett. And so we hooked it up. And we played enough of our good kids so that we would beat them.
Right, right.
But, and then he came to me after his first year at Weberville, and he said, Dad, he says, I think I want to coach at the next level, college, want to coach college ball. And I said, oh, boy. You know, here he is at home, settled in, stable, you know, and the unknown of that, the good old boy system, and tough to break in and so forth. And I really kind of discouraged him.
You did.
I did. And but we had a lot of good talks about it, and finally, you know, he went with our blessing. And he got a job in Fort Dodge, Iowa, at Iowa Junior College, Iowa Central Junior College. And when he left, I thought I lost my best friend. It was tough. I mean, he's about 10 hours away. I mean, you just don't go there and watch him play and come back. And anyway, he was an assistant there for 2 years, and they went to the college, Junior College World Series both years. Second year, they were runner-up nationally. And at that time, I was coaching at Eastern Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so he called me, and he said, Dad, he says, you think you guys could use a grad assistant there? And so I talked to Roger Coryell, our head coach at the time there, and he said, yeah, we can get him on board here. So I had an opportunity to coach with him. So I coached him in high school. I coached with him as an assistant, both assistants at Eastern Michigan. And then I left. And when I left Eastern, he got my job as a full-time paid assistant.
So you kind of gave him that break that he needed when it comes to the college ranks and moving up, other than the first job that he got where he was 10 hours away, of course. But, I mean, he kind of moved up the pipeline. And for you guys to work together, it had to be pretty special. Oh, father and son coaching together.
Yeah,
it had to be a dream of yours, right?
It really was. And, you know, the first dream was being able to coach him. And then to work together there, and then he was there for 7 years, and I think it was 7 years, and then he took a job at Michigan as an assistant, and that was very interesting.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I told him if he brought that blue and gold stuff in the house, he was out of the will.
That wasn't it wasn't going down if he came with some maize and blue gear. Right.
But,
okay, the rivalry's real in the boss household.
Oh, believe me, it is. It really is.
Right.
And so he was there for 3 years. They won three titles there and did a great job. And then the head job at Eastern Michigan came open, and they went after him, and he coached there for 1 year, and then Michigan State came calling.
Oh, gotta love that.
That first year at Eastern Michigan, they were they started out 0-17.
Oh.
And then they went on to win their division, and they won and went undefeated in the tournament. And then they got a call from Michigan State.
Certainly some perseverance to end up here, right?
Oh, man.
Without a doubt. Now, Jake, I want to briefly talk about your time as a high school coach as well, because you coached at Lansing Catholic Central from 2002 to 2008. You got your first start when it comes to high school coaching at Lansing Everett, where you coached 23 years there. Six District Coach of the Year honors while at LCC, as well as two Regional Coach of the Year honors. I mean, what makes coaching high school kids so appealing to you? And what do you like better? Do you like coaching high school or in the college ranks?
I wish you wouldn't ask that, but that's really a tough question. I certainly love coaching at both levels. And the obvious is that, of course, that at the collegiate level, the ability is so much greater than it is in high school. But it's not all about winning baseball games. And when you look at the whole picture of things, I think the experience in coaching high school baseball, was maybe more meaningful to me personally outside of coaching with my son. Okay.
Right.
But yeah, the opportunity that you have in working with kids, influencing kids, and taking kids that really don't know what end of the bat to hang on to, and then watching their senior year blossom into you know, pretty good players and so forth. The rewards are really tremendous in high school, and yeah, I loved all those years there.
I can only imagine. And you were also, as I aforementioned, of course, you were a scout for the Toronto Blue Jays and, of course, the L.A. Dodgers. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like for you? And I always wanted to, you know, I want to dive into this question as well, because we've seen, Jake, players who play high school baseball get drafted to the pros, decide to forego college and make that leap into the pros and not succeed. And we've seen the opposite. How do you know if a kid is ready when he comes out of high school to make that leap?
Yeah, that's, you know, you take the draft and you take, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, or you take recruiting in all sports, it's really a crapshoot as far as the ability is concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have some real busts in there, and then you have some real, you know, some real gold, you know, that deposits that you find. But whether a kid out of high school, not everybody is the same. I had a young man in 1977 that went to was a seventh round pick for the Detroit Tigers, mm-hmm. Bruce Fields, and he signed right out of high school, and he was ready. He was physically mature. He was mentally mature. He was good to go.
He was rare. That's another way to put it, too.
Yeah, really, he was. Yeah. And he could handle that, being away from home and all that stuff that goes with that.
Right.
And then I had another young man a couple of years later that was a seventh-round pick for the Blue Jays. And Bruce, by the way, ended up with a 14-year professional career, did make it to the big leagues with Detroit and Seattle. And then the other young man was in 1980, went with the Blue Jays, wasn't really ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
what about him did you see, like, okay, maybe that's not a good look for him to make that leap?
Had a girlfriend.
Ah.
Yeah.
So it goes beyond just the X and O's of what they do on the field.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, he had a great family. He's a great young man, and as both the boys were. And but, you know, when you got a girlfriend, mm-hmm. you know, it changes things a little bit. And he had a really a rough time. And almost toward the end of that, his first year there, he called me and said, "Coach," he says, I think I'm coming home."
Wow.
Yeah. And
did they stay together? I'm curious.
No.
They didn't stay together. So that, oh boy.
No.
I tell you, it can break up relationships, can't it?
Oh, no question about it. So you got to do your homework. You know, number one is he signable?
Right.
Okay. Is he asking too much money? You know, and is he mentally ready? Know the family, know the young man, in and out, inside and out, character, and that type of thing. Now, Bruce's son, mm-hmm. Bruce Fields' son, was signed out of high school as well, mm-hmm. with Detroit. And he's still with Detroit. I think he's in Double A. He signed for $1.6 million. And just like his dad, he's a player.
He's ready. Just runs in the jeans.
He's a player, yeah.
$1.6 million. Drop in the bucket, right? Gotta love that. Again, folks, if you missed my sit-down with Jake Boss Sr. last night, all you have to do is simply go to video.wkar.org to check out that episode and any episode that we have produced in current sports TV history. It was a fantastic time last night with Jake Boss Sr., and much thanks to him for his time last night. He was great. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll have Brett's Bonehead Moves as well as Reflection Friday. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Friday. Well, I tell you what, folks, less than 10 minutes left here in the show. And right now, live in Studio S, we have one of our fantastic production assistants here with us. His name is Brett Cast, and he is going to be bringing, he actually, I guess last week kind of started it, but he's going to be bringing a segment regularly to the show. Entitled Brett's Bonehead Moves. You know, individuals who in the sporting world who seem to have had a mental lapse in judgment, if you will. All right, Brett, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Fantastic. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Brett's Bonehead Moves.
That's right, you clumsy bonehead.
Okay, first off, Brett, I love the intro music. Where'd you get that from?
I think it's from the movie Fox and the Hound or something okay. like that. I don't know. Then the music was from, like, the iTunes, just, you know,
dig
the
it.
Normal
it
music.
Works. Yeah. It works. So yeah. What you got for us this week?
All right, well, first up, Boston Red Sox center fielder Mookie Betts, that's his name, was out golfing on Sunday with teammate Travis Shaw, and somehow, some way, his golf cart ended up into the pond on the golf course. So kind of a terrible way to get a water hazard on that one, driving straight into a pond. But second, Michigan fans may remember this game. Former Penn State wide receiver Allen Robinson certainly does. October 12th, 2013, it was homecoming for Penn State, playing host to number 18, Michigan. 35 seconds left, Nittany Lions down 7, and then this happened.
Here's Hackenberg. He's going to go for it right here. And Robinson comes down with it.
Penn State receiver Allen Robinson, he made that huge catch that the Nittany Lions went on to win that game in 4 overtimes. Well, now that he's a receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars, he decided to get his entire torso tattooed with that catch.
Yeah, it's making like right on his ribs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is. And it's very detailed as well. So,
like all the way down to like the Nike swoosh on his cleats.
Yeah. That's
crazy.
Gotta be painful.
So he's a bonehead because you gotta live with that the rest of your life.
Hopefully he doesn't make anything more impressive than that. He's not gonna have any more room to fit anywhere else on his body. I don't know. But
exactly. I like that.
On to hockey, Buffalo Sabres winger Evander Kane. I don't know if you heard about this. He was suspended from his team for a game for sleeping in and missing a practice. Well, if you go back and look at his now-deleted Snapchat story, he actually flew out to Toronto for NBA All-Star Weekend and had a lot of partying videos on his Snapchat. So that's a bonehead move right there
for
him.
Dude, come on. Did you see that, Isaac? That was great.
Hard to blame him for that. That was a great All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, it's a great experience.
But he was late to his job. Come on, man. That can't happen.
Maybe it could be worth it.
I like that, though. That's a good one as well.
And another hockey winner here. Canadians love their hockey. Well, in a game on February 11th in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, player Francis Perron was called for a roughing penalty while his brother Alexandre was in the stands and not happy with it, decided to throw what looked like a full can of beer or pop or whatever it was. He threw it at the official Dominic Bedard and hit him right in the crotch and the guy doubled over. The referee doubled over on the ice while trying to make the call. Police did make an arrest, and there will be a court appearance soon for whoever did throw that can.
Wow. So they're taking it seriously. Legal action.
Yes, there's legal action in this. They're taking it seriously.
Oh my goodness, those were all fantastic,
yeah, well,
Brett.
You,
and I'm pretty sure that many people can check out the visuals of those moments by a simple Google, right?
Oh yeah, that I would have played a bite from that Canadian the can one, but it was all in French, so it was really hard to understand on the radio.
I speak French.
Yeah,
I will have gotten it.
Isaac, that's all that matters.
That's one person. I don't know how many people in the area listen.
You know, I speak French too. I forgot a lot.
Parlez-vous français?
Hey. Jean Mapel Al Martin. You like that? Just sweet. All right, let's Brett, thank you. How can people follow you on Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff?
Oh, yeah, follow me on Twitter at BrettCast, BRETT and KAST. That's my Twitter handle. Give me
all
a follow.
Right. My man, again, Brett's Bonehead Moves. That's a fun segment, I tell you. All right, well, 4 minutes left here in the show. You guys know how we love to close out the week here on Current Sports. It is time to reflect on the week that was in the sporting world and beyond with Reflection Friday. Okay, I just got two for you guys. And again, we bring in two more special guests to the show as well, two more of our outstanding production assistants on the show. We've got Connor Hayes and Jason Ruffin with us. We'll get to them in just a sec. I just have two, though, Isaac, to get off my chest. One, my apartment flooded. Yeah, yesterday. My apartment last night
well, not even last night, around 12 noon, I noticed this when I came back to get a bite to eat before the show. And I look, and I'm like, dude, hold on. I hear something, like, dripping. And I look in my linen closet. There is nothing but water at the bottom of it. They had to strip the carpet. They had to re— Now, what happened was the apartment above me was leaking water from their bathroom, and all of that water came right down. So, yeah. And also, though, I like this. I don't know if you peeped this yesterday, Isaac, but when we were doing interviews, Denzel Valentine kind of took a mini jab at Nigel Hayes. And it, when it was,
I did not
when
see
it was
that.
Brought up about Nigel Hayes guarding Denzel Valentine, remember, he said, quote, "No disrespect to him. It's not tough with him guarding me." And he kind of he had like a look. You know what I mean? So I like that. I like that competitiveness from Denzel. So that's my only two. Isaac?
I don't know if that's a mini jab, though. That is yeah, that's kind of like serious.
Right. That may be a right hook, right? I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Anyway, though, my reflection Friday would be the NBA trade deadline. Pistons making great moves throughout
right.
it.
Right.
Great direction for this franchise to go and totally trust SVG. And I felt bad for Nigel Hayes last night. He seems like a nice guy. You remember the stenographer and all that good stuff last year?
I do remember that. I forgot all about that, actually. But, yeah, he seemed like a good kid. Just he just got owned last night, I guess
yeah,
you'd say.
He
so. All right, let's bring in Jason and Connor. We'll start with Jason. Jason Ruff, how you doing first off?
I'm not doing too good. My Bulls got owned by the Cavs, man.
Oh, and last night. I didn't check it out.
And that's my reflection for this evening. What is happening to the Chicago Bulls? You bring in a new coach, and all of a sudden, everything goes down the drain. It was not a move I agreed with, by the way.
Yeah.
I did not think they should have been so quick to fire the original head
Thibodeau
coach.
Thibodeau was great. Tom Thibodeau, I
yeah,
love
Yeah, he was great. I loved Thibodeau. But, you know, I'm getting off the Derrick Rose bandwagon. I'm about ready to trade him.
There's a lot of drama surrounded around that team. I like that reflection. All right, Connor Hayes, how you doing, Connor?
I'm doing pretty good. I'd just like to give Jared Allen.
Oh, hold on. We can't hear you. Hold on. I'm other mic. I thought mic that mic work. Was okay. Let's go to that mic right there for you. Now we have okay. Connor on the show.
Awesome.
But Connor, how you doing? Let's start this over. Connor, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'd just like to give a longtime Vikings defensive end Jared Allen a shout out. He had a really funny retirement video riding off into the sunset. I got a kick out of that. He's actually riding on a horse.
Get out of here, really?
Going away, yep.
Is that on his social media page?
Yeah, it's on his Twitter if you want to check that out.
I have to check that out. That's a pretty funny one as well. All right, much thanks to Connor, Brett, Jason, Isaac, also Jake Boss Sr., and, of course, you all for tuning in throughout this week here on WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. We'll be back at it, same time, same place on Monday. Have a great weekend, and as always, be easy, people.